Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back, and it is now or never. And don't forget to pray. Don't forget to invoke the power of prayer and fasting. And let me see, what else? Oh, yes, that debt is fraud. So now that I've kind of covered the reminders, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, let me kind of get ready to go through. Actually, before I get into the making your elections local, we've got the wrong perception of the type of government we have. And as long as we keep in context that we are supposed to have a Republican form of government, it'll stay that way as long as you insist that it be that way. Folks, this is a self-governing system. And as we start asking our politicians to do things for us that goes outside the scope of a Republican form of government, then they're going to be happy to change and do all sorts of things because it opens the doors and windows of corruption so that they can do anything and everything, or eventually they'll end up being able to do anything and everything because that's what they're doing today. Don't, if you look at what they're doing, you can't say, you don't claim that they're not doing anything and everything. They're actually killing us. Now, it may not be that one guy, but overall, this whole thing is kind of segregated into these different little caveats and categories and so forth, to where we really don't have people that know what the heck's going on throughout the entire spectrum of government. And that right there just is an indictment to say it is out of control. So one of the things I wanted to, I was just pondering before I recorded today, because we know it's at the end of the year where they're going to kind of, you know, government is going to graciously increase the Social Security. Now, I tell you, the folks that are completely dependent on Social Security are riding a train that is going to, the carnage is not going to be nice. It's not going to be kind. It's not going to be friendly, folks. Because what they have done by inflating currency is they have basically taken your disposable income, which is not much, which is what you get. Those people who are completely dependent on Social Security because they don't have a retirement, they haven't saved. And you know, by the nature of things, we were all promised, or everybody's been promised, government is continuing to promise that, oh, you can rely upon us and upon the system we've given you. And then they go and they deliberately inflate everything. And as they do that, they have not maintained the correction for that. Now, even though they shouldn't even be doing this, and we have to end this, and there's a way to do this where not one person gets hurt. Not one person gets hurt by ending this and getting completely away from it. It doesn't mean that you won't get paid. It means that no more people will be put into the system to basically devastate them and hold this over their head. We got to end this. But anyway, I know that that's, you know, that causes a lot of angst, fear, and all sorts of other emotions. So anyway, what I want to dive into regarding this is that when we look at how they have taken, and especially in these states, if look at these blue states that have these really high labor wages. In other words, if you were earning your Social Security and minimum wage was maybe $2 when you started working, and or less than that, and today you live in a state where the minimum wage is $17. I'm going to tell you, if that's minimum wage and Social Security was kind of aligned with minimum wage, then you're not getting minimum wage. Because if you do the math on minimum wage at $17 an hour, and I'm just going to do this real quick, if you do 17 times 40, you know, that's basically 680 a week times four, and that's going to be 2720 a month for 2 weeks. And yes, because 680 a week, 2070 four times. So no, yeah, that's right. That's about right. 2070 or 2720. I'm sorry. 2720. That's minimum wage. And so I don't think that's what people are getting on Social Security, but still it's that's a minimum wage. Now, let's be clear. Minimum wage was never intended, and it should never have been a life sustaining, or what do they call that, a living wage. That's what they call it today, the progressives. That sounds so good, a living wage. So, you know, I can buy a house and have a car and be able to, you know, owe all of the gods that control, you know, all of our finances. I can pay all of them my monthly payments and be thankful that I'm allowed to live. And so as we look at what minimum wage or actually what they're trying to create as this living wage, then we really have to look at, you know, what is the real cost of living? Because if you actually look at the cost of living for food, I don't even think you can feed yourself, you know, a family of two, 2720, yeah, might be stretching it. So how is it that we can do this? How is it that anybody, I should say, that is stuck on Social Security, they don't have, folks, at this point in time, we recognized a long time ago, we've actually come up with with a phrase for it. It's called our most vulnerable. The babies and the infants and the unborn, they're one of the most vulnerables. The same thing with the elderly, or I should say the handicapped, those people who can't necessarily work anymore, aren't they, you know, one of the more vulnerables as well? And so as we kind of look at our society, as we've been pushed down this path through this, I'll call it economic warfare, they're creating conditions and situations where people are having to make very difficult decisions. And, you know, it's the progressives that want to continually, you know, be very gracious with what they think is important. But, oh, boy, you better tout their line. As a matter of fact, the interesting thing, when they just started all of these social programs, when they started getting people to become tolerant, it was about tolerant for everything, everyone, right? We, you know, how dare you try to inflict your religious affiliations and your views upon me, you know, just because I'm asking for a handout. And now they've turned the tables and they say, you know, because you're progressive, because you're conservative, because you vote, because you go to church, maybe you shouldn't get this. Maybe you shouldn't get this stipend that we control now. You know, your enemy is always your enemy, but when they don't have control over you, they come up with little things like, well, we'll just have to agree to disagree. But as soon as they can figure out how to dominate, control, and actually, you know, do what they need to and want to you, then it's all over. There's no longer we're going to agree to disagree. I said so, and that's it. And that's how tyranny works. So I'm just thinking that because there's no election year, why did I even get on Social Security? Just because there's no election year, and it's the one demographic, it's the one voter block that seems to be pandered to only during elections. And so they'll go back down to this minimum, even though inflation has been in the 20 percentiles since Obama, or not since Obama, since Biden took office. It's easily over 20% inflation has gone up. It hasn't gone down back to where it's 2%. And they're telling today, they're saying, oh, it's about 2.3%. And it's not. It's not even close to that. It's still up, and we're still ranging about 24, 25%. So are they going to maintain those types of increases? Have they actually kept pace with? Heck no, that's not their job. Their job is to, with a sleight of hand, give you a harder and harder situation to deal with. And so my heart goes out to everybody that is dependent and in those situations. Folks, there are consequences to elections. There are consequences to failure to do what the few things that we need to do as a citizenry. It was nice that we actually, you know, had a government at one point in time that we didn't have to watch and worry about, but that's long and gone. That's been long and gone for a long time. When people started realizing that there were operatives in our government who had plans to attack us and destroy us, and that information came out very quickly. But, oh, we were all just so slow to, oh, yeah, I don't see it, you know? I just can't see how they're attacking us, you know? And look at the nice things we get. Well, they come out and they plow my driveway for me. So, regardless of the little benefits you get from government, regardless, I'm here to tell you that those benefits don't mean squat when it comes down to your ability to just survive, because they have got such a barrage. I guess that's the best word for it. They've got such a barrage of ways they are attacking you. It is attacking you via the geoengineering. They're attacking you via cultural engineering. And when I say these engineerings, it's not just a single thing. It's not just chemtrails. It's not just, you know, the invasion, the cultural engineering from the education system. There are so many different things and little I'll just say, you could call them factors, but there's actually contributors that are going into these little pots of engineering. And the government does not have any role, responsibility, or power to conduct any form of engineering for the better of for the betterment of our society. It's almost like, wow. It's almost like somebody just said, hey, we need to turn D.C. into a coven, a witch's coven, and they're going to start pouring spells and turning all sorts of, you know, evil upon us. Now, Mason stated that during the Virginia ratification debates, and, you know, it seemed to be hyperbole. But in context to today, I think he hit the nail on the head that it will become the darkest and blackest of, you know, of our government, that they will be doing all sorts of evil upon the people. And bottom line, they're getting away with it. So one more thing I wanted to bring up. I'm still in pursuit of bringing Chip Murray on, and he's out of Orange County Strong, out of New York, and he's got some music. I'd probably like to get maybe a sample or two up there so that on my website. So I'll talk to him, or maybe he'll have a website, and he'll be able to, you know, do that. But we'll talk about getting this because, you know, it's great to have a prayer in our hearts. And it's always good to have positive music and positive reinforcement in our life. I mean, I remember, you know, because they've been studying human nature for a long time. And they came out, even when I was a kid, they said, you know, the first expression you make or receive from somebody could actually set their tone for the day. So if you smile and you're cordial, you're nice. If we're nice to each other, it helps everybody else start off and have a good day. You know, it only takes one person to be all pissed off and, you know, just, you know, grumpy or what have you to really set the wrong tone for you. And as a matter of fact, one of the things I've discovered, this was when I was in the Marine Corps, that, you know, the one way you could really ruin a person's day is when you live in a world where there is reserved parking or people have claimed parking spots. And so if you actually happen to show up and somebody, you know, you have your own parking and somebody's in your parking, oh, that just ruins your day. I mean, because we're so possessed that's mine. It's like somebody stole your child. And it's sad to see how important parking has become because our cars mean that much to us. Is this a world of idolatry or what? I don't know. I'm just throwing these things out here because you can tell when somebody's taken somebody's parking or had a situation over. It just affects their day. And, you know, letting go of that may take a week because I've seen it. I've actually seen it because I worked in commands where, you know, people would get the privilege of being able to park in that spot or have this special spot, you know, and everybody would look, hey, that's a, you know, that's a low ranking person. How does that person get that spot? How dare that person? As a matter of fact, I happen to know somebody who was very near and dear to me that was an E6 up on Camp Smith, and there was a lieutenant colonel that was upset with that an E6 was able to get that prime parking spot, and they had to park out in general parking. And so, you know, this person took this vendetta and just made this one person miserable over the fact that they couldn't have that parking. So, you know, when we look at what it takes, they've been doing all these studies. How we treat each other is so important, so important. Now, before I get into making elections local, I wanted to do a summation kind of on this objects in the mirror closer than they appear. As I was trying to allude to the fact that this has been a struggle as I'm getting started, because you know, you got to have a transition from one article to the next. And if you've read Why Counties Matter Most, most of you are probably just going, I can't wait to get this next article. Because these are academic articles that I'm providing you that actually spell out, you know, the evolution of our government. This spells out the things that you've just never been taught. I was never taught this. I had to learn all of these things. And in the process of having to learn this, at points in time, I had to be wrong. And if you've ever heard me say this, I don't like being wrong. I don't like to necessarily brag about being right, but I do not like being wrong. I like to be able to say something that you can depend on. And as a matter of fact, as a person that worked in the intelligence community for a long time, you know, you get to a point where you're briefing officers, you're briefing generals, you're briefing dignitaries. And I've briefed my share of dignitaries, officers, and so forth when I was working at the Pentagon and other places. And so I do know how empowering it is when you're asked a question and you know the answer. Not only do you know the answer, but you know the details to a point where you hear the officer, and in one point in time, it was a general that was, you know, saying, that doesn't matter. And I said, absolutely, it does. And I kind of went through the details. And it really didn't matter to that general. And I got in trouble for daring to argue or at least having this debate and dialogue. And I had to correct the officer that wanted to tell me that that's not my job when actually, in fact, a staff NCO's job is to provide all of the details and information. And then at that point, once you've done that, because you just can't let a cursory, well, it doesn't matter, go. You actually have to dive into those details so that they completely understand the breadth and depth. And then once they do, and they still say it doesn't matter, then that's on them. But at least you know you have done everything to give them the best information to make the best decision. If they choose not to, and I've seen this, and this is one of the reasons why I have problems with officers, because they choose not to. It's all about politics. It's all about that next ring, the next star, whatever it is in their political career. They're politically wired, where on the enlisted side, it's not. So that's another story for another day. And so as we look at these things in the mirror, and as we look at what we're doing and where we are right now, one of the biggest deceptions, because everybody looks at good and evil, and they think that, oh, well, good and evil is really Democrat, Republican, or you know, progressive, conservative. They create this big, large division. Now, on the progressive or the Democrat side, they're not hardly, they are divided. They have differences, but they're not divided. They're not killing themselves up over these ideological things. Why is that? Because they understand that we, as long as the people on the conservative side are confused and don't know what's going on, they're getting their way, and they understand that every time they win, they all win. They may not all win at the same time, but they know they're moving in the right direction to where they can get their wins. I have said this before. If we had all of these, and I'm not talking about just organizations, I'm talking about grassroots efforts like anti-abortion, gun rights, and environmental, you know, CO2 pipelines, geoengineering stuff. When you look at all of the myopic issues, health freedom, and the conservative positions in all of those, and how all of these efforts are so myopic, and then when you start dealing with them, they can't unite. And as a matter of fact, I'm telling you, they can't nor will they unite. Why is that? Because they're not allowed. Now, hold on here. Surely the person that you're talking to has the ability to decide whether they can or not. Nope. No, they can't, because they as a person can walk away from the organization that they're working for, but they cannot make the decision of actually joining their organization to your efforts. They're funded and chartered to basically do a very specific thing, and they're given guidance not to do those things, not to, you know, not to unite with other people. In other words, you're in a silo and you can't leave. Well, you can leave, but the silo cannot open its doors, and it cannot start cross-sharing, cross-pollinating, and working together. Why is that? So when we look at this good and evil, I will tell you that the place where evil is working, and where evil has such a strong toehold, it is in our camp. Even though we see people that look and they go, this is a good thing, stop an abortion, this is a good thing. But by not working and not adjoining and not going to the macro view, to the real solution, because we cannot take our government back over abortion alone. Because it's really not about abortion. It's really not about your gun rights. It's not about medical freedom. It's not about the invasion. It's not about the UN. It's about the Constitution. Every problem that these grassroots organizations are dealing with, they're dealing with a different and a variety of ways violations of the Constitution. Whether it is the selling of American property and resources to foreign entities, that is a violation. Abortion is a violation of the Constitution. Because it's not listed, they can't meddle with it. And if they can't meddle with it, then they can't usurp and control and regulate. And so we've seen them do this. They do this all the time. And they're continuing to do this. And we act as if they can do it and that's legitimate. If we all backed out and said, hold on, they can't do any of this, and we started uniting on the premise that the Constitution only gives you the authority to do these things, now we're all saying the same thing. Now we're uniting, and now we can solve everybody's problem. But as long as you're over there, and they're over there, and they're, these guys are in this place, and these other people are in their place, as long as we're divided, then we are being destroyed. And they're destroying us at breakneck speed because they see we are, right now, we are incapable of putting aside our differences and our self-interests and doing the right thing. This is why you hear me say that the adage, the old saying, united we stand, divided we fall, is ringing so loud, it is deafening. People can't even hear a word that's being said because we are so divided. Now, you tell me where the camp of evil is really working, because over there, they're all just backstroking across the River Haiti to hell, right? Anyway, I'll get back to that metaphor because we're going into a break. And I hate, and I do it too often, bleeding into the break. So we'll take a pause. And when we come back, we'll dive back into the summation of why and what I was really trying to say on Friday is so important. We'll be right back after this.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416. Okay, so if you can understand what it takes to win, you know, if you can understand the simplicity of the adage, if you're not a part of the solution, you're a part of the problem, then if things start, you know, really start meshing. And sometimes we have to be, you know, I guess a little cliquish or cliche, use these cliches and you know, speak in metaphors. But when we are not working together, you know, that old adage, united we stand. If we're not working together, then we're actually working on our own interests. If you understand what it takes to win a war, if you understand what it takes to win a game, a fight, you know, you can't just haphazardly do it. I mean, yeah, you just give the ball to so-and-so and you know, like Jordan, you know, could Jordan go out there by himself without four other players? Because we've all seen how Jordan just carries a team. And we've seen other players like that. And I know there have been other players in different sports that really carry the team. But they won't win every game. The game really does require the players to work together. The more they work together, the better they play and the better they win. And as a matter of fact, the best team is the team that does not have a Jordan on it. I mean, it's great to have the most powerful, or I should say the best in the class and in the league at the time. It's nice, but that, what that means is you can't have a bunch of superstars, because how many times have we seen America's superstars in basketball go into the Olympics and fail to bring back gold when, you know, this is the world's best. These are the, you know, the very best there is. How is that? How does that happen? And it goes down to synergy. When you have people that perceive themselves as equally important in, you know, the game, in the sound, in the music. It's like when you look at music by musicians and so forth, there are these super groups that you get these people together and they do some really great things, but beyond that one point in time that they were willing to do that, then that's it. And when we look at, I mean, we put way too much on the individual and we don't put enough on the, I'll just say, the synergy or the collective effort. When we look at, and a good example musically is the Beatles, because the Beatles were so successful. There are other bands that are like this, but the Beatles are a good example because they did actually all have their own separate careers. And if you look individually, their careers individually at the same time did not amount to the energy and productivity and success that they did when they were together. And so it took a while for people to kind of, you know, like Paul McCartney and John Lennon, they kind of had their own thing, but it still wasn't the same as the Beatles. And so there's a huge difference when you actually have synergy, because that's what you're really getting. If you've ever heard people that are synchronized in singing, you know, the synergy that their voices and the harmony that they, it's just amazing. why are we denying ourselves the success that we need? Because there is evil that has got a toehold on these organizations. When an organization goes around, and I'm okay with an organization attacking what I am selling. You know, these First Amendment petitions, I'm okay with them trying to attack it. I'm okay with them trying to say Republic Review doesn't work. But if they're going to say that, they better back it up with some academic information. And they don't. All they do is they basically generalize, oh, that's not going to work, and you got to be careful with GR. And the real intent behind their attack with me, to me, is ad hominem. It is a personal attack. And I can personally attack anybody. I mean, I could do the dirt digging, really. I mean, we can always do that. But does at the end of the day, are we a better person because we did that? Or are we a better person because we put aside our differences and we put aside our self-interest and we work together? When we have successes, that's what we want. There is only one that doesn't want that. And that one is disturbing the house of the good people of America. And what I mean by that is the one that doesn't want us to unite, the one that wants to deceive us, that's Lucifer, that's Satan. He wants us to be pitting ourselves against each other and attacking each other. So, the only way we can get out of this is we actually have to start identifying what is the solution. And the only way to do that is to actually walk through what everybody's selling. I believe, and I've been an advocate for this for years, I've asked the Constitution Party, I've been trying to get organizations to actually start moving this. The first organization I worked with for 2 years to get them to actually create an open forum for an academic discussion on which way is the way to go. That was the John Birch Society. And they chose to actually maintain the control and focus of what they were going to do and disturb other people. That's their modus operandi. Worked with the Eagle Forum. I worked with a lot of different groups. Now I've worked with the Wyoming Republican Party, and still am, because they actually see and they're on board. The Constitution Party, members of the Constitution Party. Never got the whole Constitution Party, Independent American Party. We've had these folks on this show. And you hear me trying to bring them to this table to have these discussions so that if we can actually lay out the convention of states, you know, lay that out on the table so that we can all see what it will bring fruit to. What could it possibly do at this point in time? Can it solve our problem? And see, the reason why these teams, these leaders don't want to go into this room is because they know that what they're selling does not solve the problem. Nullification, single state nullification does not solve the problem. And so that's what this next article is going to do, is it's going to do that. Because once we have this conversation, or once it's been laid out for you, and once you actually see how this can't actually solve the problem, we have to actually then first start off with, what is the problem? What is the real problem? The problem is that the general government believes they can do anything and everything they want to, and they are doing things that they should not be doing, but they're doing it because they believe they can. And we're not stopping them. And they don't think we can. They don't think we will. And that's the big deal there, folks, because when we actually start getting organized and we start taking back our government, boom, 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 you know, at the county level, and you get enough counties, ba-doom, to take over the state, now all of a sudden we're going to be getting some attention. And as a matter of fact, if we get to that point, and we get to that point before they pull their activation trigger to, you know, to try to push us off the cliff. Oh, you know, this is, you know, what do they call that? Their emergency plan. When they see things are going too good, then they you know, destroy something, or they take away our economy. Some people are saying, by the way, that after this election, there is going to be a lot of chaos. There's going to be disruptions of power. There's going to be a revolution because of the left. I'm not convinced that's going to happen. I'm not convinced that that is going to happen. And I say that because there's too much money on the table for power industries not to be able to make their money. And there's all these other things that I just don't see that happening for a long period of time. It may happen here, it may happen there, but I don't see it happening as a new norm for us. We're all going to have to live without electricity, at least not at this point in time. Now, we may see it much later when, you know, we've come to this, I'll just say this pinnacle, but we're not there yet. And I say that pinnacle is when the Armageddon begins, something like that. I mean, I think that's when everything kind of shifts. But at this point in time, there has not been an ascension of the Antichrist, right? That's not happened yet. And so, because the Antichrist has to deceive us, and it has to actually convince us, you know, because I don't see these calamities occurring till after he ascends. So, folks, I may be right, I may be wrong, and you've already heard me earlier. Sorry about the frog. You've heard me earlier talk about I like being right. I think that for us to buy in to this new global scheme, it has to be done in a way that it seems that everybody's winning and everything is going good. And so I think that this election is very pivotal, very pivotal. And I honestly see that however the election goes, America loses. Now, would it be better to have Trump? Absolutely, because the evil that is being unleashed is an unvarnished evil. Putting all that aside, what's more important is us uniting on the Constitution. And the way we can do that is at the local level first. So this is why we get into this, you know, this concept of making all elections local. That's one of the things that we actually have to start doing. We're not going to be able to actualize a local only elections. Local only elections means that nobody can influence, nobody can come in, nobody can contribute to a campaign or anything. In other words, if it's a globalist effort that's coming into your community, they have no business coming into your community. As a matter of fact, the only people that can actually come into your community are those people that choose to come live there. When corporations come in that operate from another state into your state, that's actually unconstitutional to your state. Allowing somebody to actually operate, it's almost like allowing people to live in your state without living there. We're creating this virtual world in everybody's state. And we're not even wise to this. This is how, you know, international influences and all of these things are getting easier and easier. You've heard me say sarcastically that maybe we should just send all of our ballots to China and Russia. Let them choose our president, because that's how bad it is, because we're not guarding our election process. The only people that should be voting in an issue are those people who have stake in that issue. In other words, you have to be a citizen in that county, in that election area. As a matter of fact, we've talked about this importance of a Republican form of government. Folks, if we have a Republican form of government, and that is your representative that represents a legislative district, and somebody comes up to that person that does not live or reside in that legislative district, then why are they talking to them? As a matter of fact, our legislators, our representatives want free access for everybody to come to them, because then their hands and their pockets are open so that they can receive the information and what these people want so that they can tend to them. and technically and legally, they can only tend to the Constitution. In other words, what they have to support isn't the lobbyists, and technically they're not even to support you. They're to defend you and protect you. They're to support that Constitution against enemies, foreign and domestic, and to ensure that you have all the protections. If you want to run a business, you will have an equal and a competitive work field or a competitive market to work in, that nobody gets an advantage from government. Nobody gets advantages sideways from any other interests or what have you that should not be in that market. In other words, when we really look at the way we're supposed to be living in this Republican form of government, it is supposed to be cast within, you know, our spaces, not other spaces. And what I mean by that is, if it is a space that is in business, if you're actually competing in business and Walmart actually comes in, the fact that Walmart is coming into your state, where Walmart hasn't come up and basically created a business model and has created an acknowledgement of labor. Because, see, this is all being done by the federal government. The federal government has unconstitutionally created this interstate marketing and this interstate corporation by regulating them. They're regulating them to determine how they have to behave in every state. And that you can't create any differences of how, if they're going to come into your state, they got to do these things. And technically, that wipes out your state sovereignty. Does that make sense? Because when you have the sovereignty and Walmart wants to come in, they're going to have to, and this is where we can actually get the outcomes that are best for the state and for the people when we regulate them on our own. But when the federal government steps in and says, this is how we're going to regulate these corporations, then they can do it to our disadvantage and they can do it to the advantage of foreign entities and enemies. It's so much more important to have the local controls and local decisions as local as possible. This is why when we start looking at what we really should be doing at the county, we should be doing things that drive the decisions or actually set the decisions so that at the state level, they're told what we want them to do. And at the federal level, they're told what we want them to do. We should not be allowing them to make these decisions. Does that make sense? When we are a Republican form of government, that means that we, the sovereigns, and our government, because our governments we create are sovereign. And the most sovereign government of all governments in our world are our counties, because those are personally the governments that we, the people, make. And that is where we should be vesting whatever powers we want our government to have. And then at the state level, we put in check very limited functions that we give them to serve us in the government fashions we want, like infrastructure. We want roadways and those types of things. And we have to participate in this process. You know, I know that there's all sorts of people that participate in the PTA because, wow, that's really important. But how come you don't have a PTA for infrastructure? How come you don't participate in a PTA regarding commerce or a PTA regarding healthcare? If you start understanding the importance and then we start looking at what we should be doing, this whole thing of jury duty needs to be put on the side, or I should say be put on its side, to where we understand that public service is a requirement in all, for all of us to be participating in a sundry of ways. And when we start looking at our court system, and when you start learning about common law, you're going to say, why are we not using common law? Everybody loves it when an ambulance chaser walks up to them and says, I'm going to make you a rich person. That hot coffee in your lap, we're going to bring millions to you. In common law, that never would have happened. In common law, that never would have happened. So that's civil law, and that's why that was considered a civil case. Not criminal, a civil case. And in common law, that would never have happened. So when we start looking at this concept of making all elections local, we have to then, because this is what we just left off with, we have to be clear, only those who reside within the area of election have a right to vote on those specific offices, measures, and initiatives, etc., directly associated to the election of the area, or to the city, town, the county, district, or what have you, state. So when we actually make sure that we're protecting the access to the ballots, then what is the best way to do that? Let everybody print them and just have generic ballots? See, when you all of a sudden say, no, they can't vote on those issues, now you can actually tailor it down. And when we look at school districts, they have the ability to do that. They already possess the ability because they can actually prove with these levies. Why is it that they can do it with these levies? If they can do it with the levies, they can even further fine-tune the levies to say, if you're a property owner, if this house is the property owner, this person getting this ballot by name is the property owner in this county, is a property owner, then that person can vote. If you're a renter, you can't vote on that issue. It's that simple. You can. It's just like Ford and GM. If you have stock in both companies, you can vote in both companies. But if you only have stock in one, and I wouldn't have put it past them a long, long time ago. If you owned GM, you couldn't own Ford. You had to, you know, pledge your allegiance to one company. It's kind of like pledging your allegiance to the United States. Can you actually support two manufacturers? I guess you want to hedge your bet. Or what if you happen to be one of those maniacal people like J.P. Morgan and go into a company and buy up enough stock to where you have controlling interest, and then you deliberately put, you know, bad people at the leadership and at the helm of that corporation to actually undermine it? Because and I've seen this. IBM has done these things. Not necessarily at the stock level or at the corporate level, but they've constantly done, I'll just call it market warfare with their competitors to basically destroy them, especially those who were perceived as a big threat to IBM. I've seen these things. And we allow that type of warfare because it's all sanctioned and blessed by the corporations. Or I should say, by the government, the federal government, in regulating the corporations. Now, if you had, let's just give you an example, IBM and SGI. If SGI was in one state and IBM was in a different state, IBM would not be able to necessarily go out and buy, you know, a software of another state. Let's say there's a third-party software, and let's call it Veritas. And Veritas is out there, and IBM wants to buy that stock. Well, under this current, you know, laissez-faire, open everything regulations, they could do that. But if Veritas was going to be protected, then the state where they sit would not allow that transfer to happen. Especially if they realize mergers and acquisitions don't benefit the state. And the state actually has interest in what those companies are doing. And this is how we've basically been able to pillage throughout America in making mergers and acquisitions that harm states altogether. And if you start looking at it, you'll probably find that there's been devious people behind all of these things. To say, yeah, we want you to do this, and this is what we need to do. This is how big tech has got as big as it's had. So when we want to, I can't emphasize this enough. If a foreign person, a foreign business, a foreign entity or organization involves themselves in any way, as a matter of fact, they shouldn't even be in your state and county, period. But if they involve themselves in any way with a measure, initiative, or et cetera, then they should be arrested. What they're doing should be arrested. In other words, it should be stopped. That money should be seized, and it should basically be, you know, confiscated. If the person or members of a business, entity, or organization are U.S. citizens, then at a minimum, they must lose their citizenship, I believe, and I'll submit for 12 years. Anybody that wants to start playing around with elections, we need to make the punishment serious because we just marginalize it. I mean, just look at what's going on. We have a government that's waging warfare and killing us. Are you kidding me? We're just going to slap people's hands on the because they're able to get play games with our government? There are consequences to elections. And that the consequences are literally life and death. Literally life and death. And it's not a life and death of a war on some foreign nation. It's warfare being conducted right here in America. So we need to be serious. We need to get states to actually start, you know, establishing laws that will take their citizenship. Oh, states can't do that? Actually, they can. And in 1795, with the An Uniform Act on Naturalization that was established by Congress, the states at that point in time, and by definition, the states owned the established process of a citizen. In other words, the person had to become a citizen of the state before they could become a citizen of the United States. Prior, or I should say later on, the federal government started stepping in to say, you just can't come into the United States. They actually started slowing down the wave of people coming into the United States. Then once they allowed you in, then you could go anywhere, and you still needed to become a citizen of that state first. And so we've talked about this. And yes, the precedence and the standing is there. Just because they've redefined it doesn't mean that's legitimate. Because if a state says you can't be a citizen of this state, or you can't be a voting citizen in this state for the next 12 years because of what you just did, because you committed voter fraud, because you committed election fraud, or even worse, banned forever, then that means that that person should suffer as a non-citizen for a long time. Folks, I want to be clear here. If you lose your citizenship, that means you lose due process. That means you lose everything. And we need to actually, I know it's not like taking somebody's life. It's not a capital punishment, but it is a hard slam. It's a body slam. I get it. But we have to start using, I'll just say, punishment that fits the crime. When people are dying, we shouldn't just look at this as, oh, what's the harm? We're dying. That's what's the harm. And if you're not connecting the dots, what they've been doing economically, geoengineering, cultural engineering, all of these things that they have no authority to do, that they're doing to us, is resulting in people dying, losing property, and suffering. And at whose hand? Oh, at the hand of our own federal government, who doesn't have the authority or power to do any of these things. Folks, we'll get back into this. I didn't mean to harp as much as I did, but sometimes I just get, this dog gets on a bone and just starts chewing it. One thing's for sure, I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic. And we need your help. God bless.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, process. This is what is referred to as Republic Review. Please read my argument for Republic Review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.